Hi, everyone, and welcome to this bonus episode of Marisol de la Cadena, where we are exploring further the concepts of both the pluriverse and what it means to design in and for the pluriverse. For this episode, we will be reflecting and exploring some of the work that the MDes candidates and the PhD researchers in transition design from Carnegie Mellon University did in a course that I taught with Dan Lochten, which is a seminar in, it has two names actually. One is Design Theory in Practice, and it's also called Advanced Interaction and Service Design Concepts for the School of Design at CMU. And today we have the pleasure to have two of the students that were on that course. One is Nandini Nair, and then we also have Alex Poltzin. Nandini, or Nance, as she likes to be called, is one of the MDes students who is graduating this very year. So hi, Nandini.
Hi, Marisol. How's it going?
Good. How are you? Can you introduce yourself very briefly?
Yeah. So I'm a designer from New Zealand, and I joined the MDes course in 2019 at CMU. I'm a product or an interaction designer by trade. And so right now I've been working at an organization called Kumu and studying part-time as well. So that's me.
And then Alex is a recent PhD researcher. This is your first year, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Thanks so much for having me today. I'm a first year researcher in the transition design program, and I'm super excited to be digging in, exploring the intersections between design, technology, and business.
Thank you so much. And thank you both for being here today. So what I'm going to do right now is just to give it a little bit of context in terms of why we did this exercise, why what was the inspiration out of it. So at the time, in last fall in 2020, around September, it was the same time where we actually did the interview with Marisol de la Cadena. And as I was preparing this course with Dan, I was in charge of a specific module that was exploring the topics of ethics, politics, the politics of design, especially the aspects of material politics and the pluriverse. And we read the introduction of the book A World of Many Worlds, edited by Marisol de la Cadena and Mario Blaser. And as part of the discussion, we had an assignment where I asked the students to create audios in an exquisite corpse fashion. Exquisite corpse is a technique used by the surrealist painters, where they will draw on a sheet of paper and then fold it to conceal part of the drawing and then pass it to the next painter to build on the previous contribution. So I thought it was a very good way to experience and experiment, reflect upon the politics of design, what could be the possible implications of designing in the pluriverse and for the pluriverse, and what if we did an audio version of it. So what we asked the students to do was to record a 1-minute reflection about what it means for them and what are the implications of designing in and for the pluriverse. And in the same fashion, one student was presented with a recording that was the previous recording, and then that fueled or fed what they were supposed to be recording in terms of both their interpretations of what it is, what are the concepts, but then how they could be or they should be connected somehow with the previous contribution. And on that note, I would like to hear from both of your perspectives, how was to be in the other end of the experience when you were receiving this contribution, this audio, and then trying to make sense of it while also injecting some of your own perspectives and worldviews. So if any of you want to jump in and answer that question.
Yeah, it was a real gift, the whole process of participating, because there were various levels where things were being revealed and points where I was imagining what the previous person created or what the next person might create after listening to my recording. I felt like sitting with those feelings of like not knowing but also imagining and putting my own bias onto what it should be and then reflecting back on that, like that whole process was very generative and very rich. How did you feel, Alex?
Plus one to that. It was fun. It was also a lot of fun to engage with our classmates remotely, asynchronously, and take wild creative license to build on something that they had done. I remember I received a 1-minute recording of a conversation between a classmate and Google Translate. They were asking, they went back to a kind of elemental word in that appears across different languages, so papa, and asking like, Google, in Spanish, what is papa? And then Google responds in a very robotic voice, papa. And then building that out into asking about how the word is translated in distinct languages, and then reaching a language that Google didn't understand. And so then I wanted to see if I could build on that to extend to the natural world. And so went out into the backyard to record a telephone conversation between my computer and my mobile phone from one end to the other, just taking in the ambient noise and then reflecting that back to itself.
That's really nice. I loved what both of you were saying, this aspect of uncertainty and not knowing what you were going to get, and at the same time trying to have some sort of preconceived idea of what it could be, or trying to speculate what it could be. And then once you got the recording, also trying inevitably injecting your own biases and interests, design interests. And I think it's super interesting how that becomes this process of negotiation, which is what a lot of times design is, or it should be, and then how it became this arena where you didn't necessarily have to become like get to a consensus of what it should be. It's not like you got together and say, we're gonna make a recording and you're gonna go first and then you next, and I am gonna record only nature and then you will do this robotic voice. It's more about, I received this and then I have to consent at some extent to what I've received and adapt to that and design around it, but then also shape it for the next person. So it's like this negotiation process that happened asynchronously without being in the same city, even like not even in the same time zone, because Nance was in New Zealand already at that point. So it's just fascinating how this is such a, like, looking at it from a meta perspective almost.
Just to build on that, like, absolutely. Thinking about it both from like the pragmatic realities of last fall and everyone's kind of sheltering in place, there's also the process, or the format to me seemed to really search for a design for the Pluriverse. Because it's hard. You can't bring every voice, everyone, or every non-human together under one roof in a participative forum. And so to seek out what other people have already built, and then build on that for the next person to take up, becomes a much more open-ended and I think, just very vast, or it has a vast possibility, which is exciting.
Yeah, I also really like, so the person who had created their recording before me had done it in a speech to text kind of software. So it sounded like a robotic voice, like it sounded like a machine was talking about the Pluriverse. And my reaction to it was to go totally into nature. So I was embodying the voice of a river as a reaction to that. So what I liked about it, both of our approaches of like embodying the machine and embodying the river, was that it was that we were able to like take our ideas into a different zone and just explore what it means to live in these different kind of ecosystems, and then see any sort of like similarities or but mostly to see the differences as well. I know Marisol de la Cadena, she talks about how like most of knowledge is recursive and it's self-duplicating, and it often it explains the differences away. So like doing the Exquisite Corpse, I think was the opposite of that. It really highlighted the differences in multiple ways of knowing, whether it was the human perspective or the human trying to imagine what other perspectives could be for non-human entities as well.
And then in a sense also became very poetic, like a very poetic exercise. I was listening to it once again before this conversation, and Nance, you had like a couple of phrases where you as you were talking as the river, where you say like, I sustain you, you sustain me. You are referring to the river as a living ancestor, an earth being, different but also the same. I just think that's so beautiful. It's also showing the capacity for not only highlight and celebrate and also understand and acknowledge difference, but then that can also be this aspect of aesthetics and this aspect of appreciation for beauty and ugliness, because we also had some very loud sounds that might not be very pleasant to our ears. So it's just like all of that together. So I think that's where the richness of it is encapsulated as well.
Plenty of discord, lots of jarring moments in there as well, definitely.
Yes. We hope that you are able to continue reflecting upon this, that this is an invitation for you as a designer, or if you don't consider yourself a designer, even though many people will say that everyone's a designer, to think of this concepts, invite, if you're a professor, other students, if you're a designer or working with designers, other colleagues, to think about these concepts. And we hope you enjoy it as much as we did. Thank you, Nance. Thank you, Alex.
Thanks, Marisol. Thank you.
The following recording comprises the work of Esther Kang, Christian Frankovich, Amanda Sanchez, Nandini Nair, and Amrita Kushu.
А not only but also. It is imperative to accept that negotiation does not signify nothingness, that when the mirror does not reflect our own likeness, it does not prove that there is nothing. A pluriverse is shaping and reshaping, framing and reframing, doing and not doing, knowing and allowing room not to know.
I am the pluriverse. We are the pluriverse. Actually, I am just a crumb of it. A discarded piece of pluriverse. Alone. You can actually call me the monoverse. As you continue to have the freedom to shapeshift, to define what the pluriverse can and could be, my ancestors that were raped, pillaged and had their homes burned down, were tormented into learning the language of the oppressors, which is what you call the monoverse. Our pluriversality was dangerous to your monoverse. If we do not have the means to transform, to retell, to undo, to rebuild our pluriverse, what is left for us to do? We discarded the seeds you now call the pluriverse, and made our children plant the seeds of the monoverse. Your pluriverse is not our pluriverse. We gave you pluriverse and you gave us monoverse. We gave you senses to speak, see, and feel with. We were stripped, shoved into your box, and were sold as your version of the pluriverse. A monocrop. Modified pluriverse. How will you ever give us those pluralistic seeds we once had back?
I've always been here, the mighty river who draws lines in the earth like you do, mapping the same lands we inhabit, channeling our forces to design our homes, shaping, shifting, responding to our environments. We are linked through the eternal change we create for each other, a delicate recursive balance of interdependence. We both have the power to destroy and displace. But there is more power in this living system we maintain together. I sustain you, you sustain me. I see you, now please see me. Inscribe into your culture, into your laws, my personhood, my living entity deserving of protection and respect. Not a commodity or property to be owned and traded, but, as those of you who understand my world would say, a tipuna. A living ancestor. There is no separating us, the earth being and the anthro being. We've always been here, together in this pluriverse, differently but also the same.
I wanted to share a few abridged passages from Robin Kimmerer's book, Braiding Sweetgrass, in which she recounts the Iroquois story of creation and the Genesis story of creation. Sky Woman fell from Sky World towards the Dark Earth. As she was falling, the animals from the sea rescued her, giving her shelter on their backs. Upon her rescue, she sang and danced in thanks. And as she danced, the earth below her grew and grew, from a dab of mud on Turtle's back. The earth was made not by Sky Woman alone, but from the alchemy of all the animals' gifts, coupled with her deep gratitude. Like any good guest, Sky Woman had not come empty-handed. She scattered seeds from the Tree of Life on the new earth. And there a garden of well-being grew for her children, for the animals, and for the earth. On the other side was another woman, Eve, with a garden and a tree. But for tasting its fruit, she was banished from the garden and the gates shut behind her. That mother of men was made to wander in the wilderness and earn her bread from the sweat of her brow. In order to eat, she was instructed to subdue the wilderness into which she was cast. And then they met, the offspring of Sky Woman and the children of Eve, and the land bears the scars of that meeting. and the legacy of Eve continues. The land and our relationship with the land is broken. Can we tell new stories that reorient us towards ancestral ways of reciprocity between the earth being and the anthro being? New stories that guide us into a future of sustaining a pluriverse of cosmologies coexisting in sameness and indifference.
And now we'll listen to a recording from Anna Boyle, Maddie Sides, Yiwei Huang, Ji Yong Un, Ji Su Shun, and Russell Singer.
Yes, our planet is on fire. But as an ancient Chinese poem says, Ye Huo Shao Bu Jing, Chun Feng Chui Yo Sheng. No prairie fire can truly destroy the grass. It shoots up again when the spring breeze blows. In my eyes, us designers should be that spring breeze in every corner of the world. Our responsibility might not be creating things from the void to add to the society of the spectacle, but to nurture what's precious and bring that value back to our community and help build the ecosystem of the diverse landscape of our society. Now, let's just take some seconds to hear the sound of the spring breeze.
Thanks, Yiwei, for the beautiful Chinese poem. I agree that design should be a spring breeze that brings value to community and helps build a diverse landscape which can contribute to making a pluriverse. But how can we, as designers, make sure that the diverse landscape that we are building represents the voices of the various worlds, not only certain cultures or stakeholders? In regards to this question, I think it is time for us to more critically think about how we design together. Not only design together with other than human factors like animal, plants, or in geology, but also how do we design together well with diverse designers who have experienced different worlds in their life? What can be possible protocols or methods that helps making decisions that is not anthropocentric when working with designers with diverse perspectives and cultural backgrounds?
Thanks, G. It was inspiring to hear about what kind of critical questions that we should raise as a designer. If we can say this process of design together, which engages not only human factors but also multifaceted designers to aiming diversity as participatory design, I assume this methodology can be a small but critical step to become closer to the pluriverse. With the value of co-create, care and independency, I imagine local designers like us can understand our history, a coming future, and unique situated context, thus finally conceive ecologies of practices across entangled worlds. So we are talking about decoloniality, which aims to provide an alternative to modernity, but we need to clarify the nature of modernity that we are talking about. It's the combination of logic, history, cosmology, and technology that all embedded in modernity. And that's why we need to understand the present.
Understanding the present, it turns out, is highly conditional. As with the science of quantum mechanics, where the act of observing an event inherently changes its outcome, so too does our participation as designers affect the characterization of knowledge with which we engage. How can we counteract, or at least account for, such a tendency? Encounters where varying knowledge sets interact but do not cancel can highlight divergent epistemologies which additively approach a Goethean wholeness. Entering into the act of co-creation through a non-judgmental, dispassionate, disembodied observer's perspective, where the designer becomes a vehicle containing skills that others may direct and drive, may be a starting point for decolonization. And yet, with the observation of the designer, even a disembodied one, the wave is now measured, the waveform collapses, and a particle of discrete characteristics emerges, carrying all the hallmarks of typical designerliness. Perhaps the only viable way to avoid the paradox is to turn its loop into a spiral, and through discourse of uncommonalities, eventually meander to a meaningful wholeness.
As a designer, I am constantly trying to be present, attentive, and responsive to my surroundings, both through people and place. However, when considering how my practice might change when designing for a Pluriverse, my presence and attentions have shifted. The world in which I have been currently positioned, I develop designs that are human-centered. However, these human-centered worlds are also fundamentally connected to the natural worlds, where humans have an even deeper connection to ecological systems and a relationship with other living things, such as plants, animals, and changing landscapes that we cohabitate together. Designing for the Pluriverse requires a shift in how we associate ourselves with present places and living things. It requires reframing of our position as designers for the Earth to designers with the Earth. How do we develop designs that nurture collective possession and responsibility to care for each other and respect each of our individual needs?
I left my home state on the West Coast 1 month ago as it started to burn. As I drove, the smoke followed me to Nevada, Utah, Wyoming. Finally, I lost it somewhere between Nebraska and Iowa. The smoke has not abated since I left. 3 million acres have burned in California in 2020. The destruction of worlds by capital H humans, those who are fully invested in the practices that make the Anthropocene, meant the destruction of native ways of forest management, ways that honored the world of fire spirits that did not deny their power and authenticity. Today, the destruction of those worlds through fire threatens the illusion of progress enacted by the one world. The end of the world as we know it may mean the end of its being made through destruction. Let us walk bravely into the light of new worlds to come.
Lastly, we'll hear from Adam Cowart, Diana Chun, Alex Polzin, Stefania Lavatieta, Sanika Sasabrude, and Anuburta Ranade.
Coloniality. Romanticized past. Coloniality. Romanticized past. Coloniality. Romanticized past.
Makes me think about the first word of humanity. Scientists think that it was probably Papa. Hey Google, what does Papa mean?
Papa can be used as a noun in North American as a dated term to mean one's father.
Hey Google, how do you say Papa in Hindi?
In Hindi, that's Pitaji.
Hey Google, how do you say Papa in Arabic?
In Arabic, you would say Baba.
Hey Google, how do you say Papa in Spanish?
In Spanish, you would say
Papa.
Hey Google, how do you say Papa in Quechua?
On the website QuechuaLanguage.com, they say Mom and Dad in Quechua. 1. Mom, Mother, Mama, the most usual is to say Mame. And 2. Dad, Father, Tata or Papa, the most usual is to say Tete or Papai.
Hey Google, how do you say Papa in Inuktitut?
Sorry, I don't know how that's done.
Thank you.
What does it mean to be an outsider? In a pluriverse, the boundaries of outside and inside are blurred constantly, which makes the politics of community and technology ubiquitous. How does this outsider evolve, change, and not become an outsider anymore? How does language enable or disable our identities? Must I articulate the specificity of my identity at the risk of being lost in the pluriverse? In this future we're headed towards, what is the grammar of communication? Is it confined to spoken and written words? Is there coloniality only in the pursuit of new terrains, or does it also show itself in epistemic pursuit too? How do we design the grammar of a pluriverse in which forms of knowledge aren't written, sometimes not even oral, and sometimes knowledge isn't knowledge till an outsider shows up at the threshold of your home asking you about it?
No one man designed the loka, but many men over many generations. Many individuals represented in their own way through something they may have added or may have removed, or through some quality of which they were particularly aware. The hope for and the reason for such an institute as we describe is that it will hasten the production of the lotas of our time. By this we mean a hope that an attitude be generated that will appraise and solve the problems of our coming times with the same tremendous service, dignity, and love that the Lota served its time.
Thank you for listening to this bonus episode entitled Sound Experiments a la Exquisite Corpse. This episode concludes season one of the Design and Transition podcast. If you've enjoyed the series, please give us a shout on Twitter or rate the podcast on your preferred platform. And don't forget to subscribe. We are preparing season two, and we'll be back later this year with another great set of conversations about transition design, as well as design and its many transitions. Until then.